Joe's, what happened? Where'd the last 2 hours go? Welcome in, final hour. Buck Rising here with you till 1 o'clock. Lucas Panzeca making it all happen behind the glass. We have already gone through the John Gruden story at length. I am done with that. I've moved on. I've turned the page. We've done winners and losers of the football weekend. We've done it all. We've done it all, but not quite. If you have things to say, we welcome your involvement. 615-737-1045. 615-737-1045 is the number. We're going to talk about who the best team in the AFC is right now and then go through the trash heap that is the AFC South, or as Lucas has dubbed it, the new NFC East, which makes me cringe, makes me vomit, makes me die a little inside, but that's fine.
Makes you think.
Makes you think. That's right. But before we do that, we want to spend more time on college football, just on principle as a show. And I feel like the NFL just can't, I mean, John Gruden just has to go be a racist, misogynist, and anti-gay all at the same time from 2018 and just railroad my college football day. I'm really trying to get this off the ground. So one day, Titans don't practice, but then, again, the NFL just has to suffocate everything in his path. So, you know, bad job out of Gruden for a variety of reasons.
Let me add to that. I feel like nowadays, every time you watch a primetime NFL game, it feels more and more like you're watching a movie. With the presentation that this has been a presentation of the National Football League. I swear, it feels like we're watching a major motion picture now when we sit down for Monday Night Football.
Meanwhile, Lucas is just irritated as hell with the NFL because he's shouting at me yesterday that the Preds start play on Thursday against the Seattle Kraken for the third time this week. Like, I don't know what's happening, and you haven't told me a million times, and nobody cares because all people, I mean, literally, the NFL's ratings are up 17%. From the last season. It's as high as the NFL across the board has been in 6 years. And you're trying to yammer at me about the Seattle Kraken and the Preds on Thursday.
I am intrigued to see what the
I don't want the Panzeca Preds minute yet. I don't want it yet. I'm not doing it.
I could just mute your mic and do it.
You cannot. I will not be silenced. We will talk about the hockey team when the hockey team matters to talk about. And in fact, I'm considering declaring myself a Seattle Kraken fan because I really like their merch.
Cool logo.
That trip to the Titans game against the Seahawks a couple of weeks ago, they're shilling that stuff all over the place because it's their inaugural season. And I was like, man, that would be really, really cool. And then I realized, oh, I live in a market where there is also a professional hockey team, and also that professional hockey team opens with the Seattle Kraken on Thursday. But I've not declared my NHL allegiances. I've not said that I'm a fan of one team or another. So I think I'm considering playing heel. But we'll save that for the Panzeca Preds minute, whenever that is forced upon me yet again. Hopefully March. 615-737-1045. Let's talk about college football, though, before we get into the AFC South and what happened between the Colts and the Ravens last night that directly affects the Tennessee Titans. Is Bama still going to win it? Is basically the analysis that we are working through today. After you see the number one team in the country go down, Nick Saban loses to an assistant for the first time. He loses to an unranked opponent for the first time in 100 games against unranked opponents. The college football weekend just generally makes you really think about where everybody's stacking up because, Lucas, we'll do SEC stat of the day on Friday. But this is a pretty good one that I'm going to go ahead and burn right now. Do you know, Lucas, who now has the nation's longest streak in games that they're favored in by at least 10 or more points after Alabama's streak of 80 went down to A&M on Saturday? Can you guess? I'll narrow it down for you. It's another SEC team.
Another SEC team.
They've been favored by 10 or more points longer than anybody in the country right now. Alabama's streak ended at 80.
I want to say Georgia, but I feel like it's a trick question.
That is incorrect, but it is an SEC East team.
It's not Florida.
It's not Florida.
By 10 or more points. So it has to be a team that is not favored by 10 or more points very often. Tennessee.
Kentucky.
Wow.
Kentucky now has the country's longest streak of games that they are favored in by at least 10-plus points.
Wait, how much did they beat UTC by?
I would have to go back and look.
That's what made me kind of eliminated in my brain, was they barely edged out UTC this season. That was kind of their letdown game so far this season.
That stat courtesy of Spencer Hall of the Shutdown Fullcast, the best college football podcast, I believe, in all of the country that doesn't feature Mike Felder.
Now, they beat UTC 28-23. I would think they were favored by more than 10 in that game.
I would have to go back and look at the line. But again, that's how short the streak is. Alabama had a streak of 80. It's not about how long Kentucky's streak is. It's about how long Alabama's was. FCS doesn't count, I guess, says Brandon Rushing. Perhaps. But still, that's an insane stat. So now Alabama goes down. Their offensive line, as Mike Felder pointed out, hasn't looked great all season, and that's usually one of their greatest strengths. I mean, they don't typically have a weakness on the roster, but does it end up being Alabama at the end sitting atop the pile of skulls in the college football playoff? Because Georgia, this and Brett Doherty of 3HL, I'm sure they've talked about this on 3HL, so I hope I'm not stealing a stat from them early, because Brent and I have been texting about this since Felder was on. But Georgia, according to Brent, has given up 2 touchdowns in 6 games. They have been killing people on the defensive side of the ball, so much so that the offense just doesn't have a lot of heavy lifting to do. So at the end of this all, does it still end up being Alabama? Because Georgia looks like a legitimate threat, but they often do. There's not really anyone else out there. Iowa? Should Iowa scare Alabama? I mean, maybe, but I don't think so. Cincinnati? Cincinnati's playing a different ball game. What Luke Fickell has done at Cincinnati is hugely impressive, and they are now ranked as the third best team in the country for a reason. They're legitimately good. But you don't fear them in a game against Alabama, do you? It's unfortunate for Texas A&M that the only way that the A&M would be able to win the SEC West is if Alabama suffered another SEC loss, because that was their national championship. I mean, it was incredible. But Nick Saban talking about this earlier this week, or was this directly after the game, Lucas? Directly after the game, the loss against A&M, the head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide saying how his team and how his staff would learn from this loss.
Well, look, I knew we were playing a good team. I know they lost 2 games, but they have a good defense. They've got good players. Tight end's a really good player. A couple of the running backs were really good players. Got good receivers. Got a really good defense. So we were playing a really good team. So I thought we would have a really tough game here. So when you say this is unpredictable, it's because a lot of people assume that things are going to happen. But really it's about what you do when you play the game. So, I always tell our players, it's all about what we do. And we have to do things very well to play against good teams to have a chance to win. So, it's disappointing, very disappointing. It's my responsibility to get people to do things in a more positive way so that we can go out there and execute with more consistency.
That's Nick Saban talking after the loss on Saturday. It's rare. I mean, listen, Nick Saban learns from his mistakes. He doesn't get down bad like this often. And it's rare that they have a loss at all. But when they do, they find ways to bounce back, and then they sit atop the throne at the end of the season.
Well, 2 of their national championships under Nick Saban have been an undefeated season. 2.
Yeah.
And they've bookended 2009, his first national championship, and his most recent one last season. All the other ones in the middle, they slipped up in the regular season, whether it was a Johnny Manziel or an Iron Bowl loss or whatever it might be, even an SEC championship loss, and they still came out on top. So there's a lot of precedent for this.
Sure, but the difference is in those losses, and I talked about this with Felder, right? In those losses, it took something unique to defeat Alabama. It took the kick six. It took Johnny Manziel, who's again, celebrating moments of glory from years past on the sideline of that A&M Alabama game in a way that I thought was funny. But, you know, whatever Johnny's got to do. In this game, they just got beat. This wasn't any extenuating circumstances. This wasn't any great moment, this great singular moment that allowed Alabama to go down. No, they got beat by an inferior team. They got beat by a backup quarterback. They got beat because Jimbo Fisher coached aggressively for once against his former boss. It wasn't anything out. It wasn't anything supernatural, basically, that it took to take down Alabama this time around. That's the only difference that I would cite between this season and letdown losses of years past, because those were momentous moments that toppled the giant at the top of the sport. This was just, they got pushed around for 60 minutes.
I'd point to 2017, where they lost to Auburn by two possessions. It was a 26-14 final, regular season finale. They didn't even win the division. And then Auburn falls to Georgia in the SEC title game. That was the Tua coming in for Jalen national championship against Georgia. But you're right. The majority of them have been crazy Heisman-type moments like Johnny Manziel.
I fell asleep during that Tua national championship game.
You didn't see the end of that?
No.
At what point did you fall asleep?
First half.
Oof.
The national championship's the worst. I can't stand it. It's so long.
Yeah, it is.
It's so late.
Like an 8 o'clock kickoff.
And it's like, and it's, you know, it's either Alabama Clemson or Alabama and other SEC team X. And then I don't care because it's a regional sport at that point. And now that I have a daily 3 hour talk radio show, I'm going to have to care about it. But I used to just do primetime before the game and then be like, all right, I don't have to worry about this afterwards. It's done. Get it out of my life. So yeah, I fell asleep during one of the most exciting comebacks in the history of college football from a backup quarterback who ended up being, you know, discussed as a future number one overall pick and now is not doing so well in the pros. Conversation for another day. But speaking of Tua and the conference that he plays in, that's as close to a transition in sports talk radio as I can get. I tried. The AFC, two teams sit atop it, but the rest of it seems wide open. And the South in particular is just the Titans to lose. We'll talk about what that means based off last night's result between the Ravens and the Colts. Coming up next, you'll hear from Mike Vrabel, you'll hear from John Harbaugh, and we will get into who is the best team at the top of this conference and why the Titans have a legitimate shot. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. So we try to pride ourselves, or we do pride ourselves, on multitasking on this show. I'm in the middle of Zoom meetings with the Titans offensive assistants today. Keith Carter just wrapped up, the offensive line coach, who many of you want to fire. And that is largely inexplicable to me. Pat O'Hara is speaking now about the situation for Ryan Tannehill and how he needs to adjust the way that he holds the ball, basically, given that the protection is not what it was a year ago. Ryan Tannehill getting sacked 25 times total last season, already 20 on the year through five games. So we'll, I'm going to write something about that for AtoZSports.com later this afternoon, so you can look forward to that. I've also got something coming on Harold Landry that I think you're going to enjoy. So we'll keep tabs of that as that continues to progress. In the meantime, we're talking about the AFC at large, the Titans, the AFC South, what last night's loss for the Colts means for them furthering their grip on the division, which we spent some time on yesterday, right? That's the most important thing resulting out of that Jags loss, is that, yeah, your division is awful. Your division is hot trash right now. But if you're atop the trash, then you're king of the trash pile. And king of the trash pile gets you a ticket to the division, or rather gets you a ticket to the playoffs. And that's what matters most at the end of the day. But in the meantime, you know, are you in a position at all to unseat the Buffalo Bills, who, of course, come here for Monday Night Football? And even then, if you are able to find ways to beat a superior team, nobody is disputing that the Bills are a better team right now. But even then, does that make you better than, say, the Los Angeles Chargers, who are absolutely unstoppable, particularly on the offensive side of that ball, of the ball? The Browns-Chargers game was probably the most fun game to watch. Bengals-Packers, the most stressful. And last night was a run for its money, but I mean, the first half of that game between the Colts and the Ravens wasn't terribly competitive. It wasn't until Lamar turned it on in the second half that you really, really got back into the game. So I want to look at the Titans' next four games, because this is their most difficult stretch of the season, right? You're hosting Buffalo, Kansas City, Monday Night Football, Kansas City on a short week. You go to Indianapolis, then you play at Los Angeles, the Rams, not the Chargers, on Sunday Night Football. For the Colts, the road is much easier. And so it does still present them the opportunity to climb back into this thing. Because we put it on a poll, are the Colts dead yet? You may think so at 1-4, but it's entirely conceivable that the Titans could split the next four games, go 2-2. That would be impressive and also not good enough. 615-737-1045 is how you get in on the conversation. Let's go to Joshua, who's in Murfreesboro, who wants to chime in.
Hey, guys. How are you?
I'm great, buddy. How are you?
Doing good. I just want to call in and possibly see if you could do a poll, but just want to get your mindset because as a Titans fan, I've been cautiously optimistic. I'm excited that we're 3-2. I realize that the division games are really important. But I want to know what you think specifically to the percentage chance of what we can do in winning our next two games. And if we were to win the next two games, what would the mindset be regarding the Titans in the local media markets and then larger outlets?
Well, I mean, my response based off that, you know, do you care what the larger outlets have to say about you? Like, aren't you tired of having that conversation by now? I mean, I'm not saying that local media should be the end-all be-all because you want to turn on SportsCenter in the morning or you want to watch highlights. Do people still watch highlight shows? I watch highlight shows now because I miss so much on Sundays because I'm covering one game and it's a toss-up as to whether they'll have the other games on in the press box. But I watch highlight shows in the morning and then I watch Game Pass to get the condensed versions of the games. But, do you care? Does that really affect the way that you're going to enjoy your football team? Maybe it does. Maybe the answer to that is legitimately yes. I don't understand it, but I don't want to dismiss it. Ultimately, though, the percentage chance I give them of winning both the Bills and the Chiefs game, maybe a 10% chance. I mean, they can always surprise you. The any given Sunday cliche is one that is dumb and annoying, but it's also true. The Titans are the best probably representative of that. You can lose to anybody, you can beat anybody, and they do both on a regular basis. This team does feel different, though. This is not 2019 where you start 2-4 the way that things go down, and you make a change at quarterback, and it ends up breathing new life into your season in a way that's clear and obvious to everybody. This isn't the same situation. 615-737-1045 is how you weigh in. This is a different circumstance because the pieces that you have, they're largely in place. Now, will Julio Jones help you when he's able to return? Whatever point that is, will Bud Dupree help you and make you a better football team when he is able to return? One would imagine so. But I don't think that necessarily gets you that much closer to Buffalo. That's why the whole Julio Jones thing, I don't want to be like a pump the brakes person, even though I inherently am. But like Julio Jones in the difference between the Titans winning or making a Super Bowl. Julio Jones helps, but I've said this a million times and I'll reiterate it because maybe I haven't said it enough lately. A belief in the Titans isn't a belief in what's around, or isn't a belief in what really lies on the rest of the roster. The belief in the Titans is in the quarterback. The belief in the Titans this season is Ryan Tannehill and what you believe Ryan Tannehill is capable of. I believe Ryan Tannehill is capable of great things. We've seen him achieve at a high level. But Buffalo is overwhelming right now. Kansas City, I think, is beatable, which sounds crazy because Mahomes is, you know, the breather of fire, the most unstoppable thing in the sport, and yet his defense is infinitely his defense also incapable of getting stops. 7.1 yards per play they're giving up right now. As I watch the Derrick Henry Old Spice commercial pop up on my screen, in the studio, dragging a player behind him. That's what it's going to feel like against the Kansas City Chiefs. No, the Bills are a different football team. The Bills, in a head-to-head matchup, in a hostile environment, on the road, are 18 points better right now than the Kansas City Chiefs. That's the sample size that we have to work off of. And Josh Allen, I mean, Mike Vrabel was asked about this yesterday. He said it's basically like playing a wildcat offense with a quarterback who can throw for 350 yards. For the Titans, I mean, listen, I don't do game picks because it's impossible to pick games because it's a waste of time. It's a waste of breath. Not like I don't have time to kill, but I'm not interested in that. I don't think that provides anything to the analysis. If they win those two games, then yeah, you're being talked about much greater. But even then, I mean, it's not about what the Titans did. It's about how the Bills lost. It's about how the Chiefs lost. What kind of trouble the Chiefs are in. Is Josh Allen still an MVP candidate? This is the perpetual existence of a Titans fan. And you got to eat it. But it doesn't matter as long as you're enjoying the games. If you let how the national media covers your favorite football team affect you, what are you even doing here? I mean, we're the ones spending 3 hours a day, or rather 12 hours a day, talking about teams that matter to you. I just don't get why that should factor into the conversation. 615-737-1045. Tony is in Nashville. He wants to weigh in.
Hey, how you doing, Buck? Good afternoon.
Great. What's up, buddy?
Man, I was just feeding right off of the energy that you were bringing about against Kansas City. And, you know, Jay Martin Ramon were talking about the Chiefs still being a top 10 team in the league. And I actually replaced the Chiefs this week with the Titans and putting them at 10 strictly because of that Kansas City defense. So I was going to ask you what your thoughts were on the Kansas City Chiefs, as powerhouse offense as they are, giving up, you know, 29-plus points in their first five games, which I believe was, they said, the first time in NFL history that that had happened. And where that puts them in the playoff race, especially as well as the Chargers are playing right now. Tighten up, man. I just wanted to get your comments on that.
Thanks for the call, Tony. I don't do power rankings. So let me say that on the front end. But, I mean, the Chiefs' defense is really, I mean, they're bad. They're the worst in the sport. Do you know what they're averaging, or they're allowing teams to score on them right now? Lucas, let's play some trivia.
The Chiefs.
Do you have any idea? Points per game, what the Chiefs are giving up.
Well, I think it's dead last in the league, right?
That is correct. You want to put a number on it?
Yeah. Let me say 29.
32.6.
Wow. Almost five touchdowns.
They're allowing 32.6 a game. They are the worst defense in football right now as it relates to scoring defense. Their offense is still really good. Mahomes is still Mahomes, and their skill position players are overwhelming. That offensive line looks great, but remember that Clyde Edwards-Helaire is experiencing an injury. Now, it doesn't. I think they can find ways to make running backs functional in that offense, because their offensive line, none of them who played in the Super Bowl a year ago when Patrick Mahomes is physically laying on his side trying to get passes off from ungodly platforms and then hitting the receiver in the face and then just dropping it in the end zone. I felt if the Ravens had lost that game yesterday on Tavon Young's idiot penalty.
Oh my God.
Idiot penalty. I would have screamed on social media about how dare you betray Lamar Jackson that way.
That was so stupid.
That's the way that I felt about the Kansas City Chiefs offensive line in that Super Bowl against the Bucks, because I was screaming, how dare you betray Patrick Mahomes that way. But yes, that's as dumb a penalty as I've seen this year.
It was like shoe throwing level bad.
Yeah, you got to have more self-awareness than that, even as, you know, it was a good move by Titans legend Jack Doyle to rough him up a little bit, try and evoke an emotional response. It was effective. But with Kansas City, I mean, the Titans, their offense is not as good as it was a year ago, and they are not at full strength yet. Keith Carter, who was speaking to the media about 15 minutes ago, he was asked about the injuries and what they've done to the offensive line, and he said the injuries, if they've done anything, have hurt the growth from a confidence standpoint. It's affecting how they get into the flow of a game as a unit. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. We have to protect Ryan Tannehill better, from the offensive line coach of the Titans. So that's their most clear and obvious issue, the offensive line, and really for the team, right? The injuries are running rampant over Tennessee right now. And they'll try and use this longer week to get healthy, because, of course, they've got KC on a short one. But 32.6 points per game. So if you can score with the Chiefs, you can win. Buffalo is overwhelming both on offense and on defense. On the opposite end of the spectrum, the Bills are allowing 12.8 points per game, best in the sport. Your offense has been supremely limited at this point. I'm not as bent out of shape about them potentially and likely losing to the Bills as most people will be, right? Because I think, you know, it's like if you're a Browns fan. And you're a Browns fan and you're watching, you've got a quarterback, you've got a good team, your defense can't stop anybody, but you're going head-to-head with Justin Herbert. And the difference in that game ends up being Justin Herbert is great, and Baker Mayfield is good. But you want, as a Browns fan, if you're a Browns fan, to win that game, you want to beat a better team, or you want to be able to hang with a team that you believe yourself to be on even ground with. As a Titans fan, you want to see them beat Buffalo. You want to see them beat Kansas City, because it pacifies you, basically, about where you stand in the AFC playoff picture. Whereas I'm looking at this and saying, yeah, I mean, they can go out there, they can fight, they can play their asses off, they can make it a game, but if they lose, I'm not going to lose my mind about it. Because as long as they're atop their division, you get into the playoffs, you get another crack at them. And I staunchly believe that you give yourself a better chance in the postseason seeing an opponent that you've already seen during the regular season because you understand what their tendencies from that season are. It's not just one and done. You're not over it. Tony says, did Jason say that he thought the Chiefs were still top 10? I don't know what, I mean, I've made a lot of fun of Jason Martin's Titan Super Bowl prediction back in August the 3rd. So would it shock me? No. And I love my buddy Jason, but yeah, don't care. Top 10. It doesn't mean anything to me. Top 10, top 5, top 15, whatever. What means something to me is that the Bills are allowing the fewest points in the NFL through five games, and the Chiefs are allowing the most. That I can tangibly sink my teeth into. That I can dissect. That I can translate into how the Titans match up with an offense that's competent but limited right now. The playbook for Todd Downing is not what it would be if Julio Jones was available. If A.J. Brown wasn't on a snap count. 40 snaps against the Jags on Sunday is progress, but it's not giving A.J. the full measure of what he's supposed to be able to do. Derrick Henry is one man, and he's doing the work of 10. In fact, he's doing the work of 11 because he's their greatest source of offense, him and Jeremy McNichols. But that cannot be the only thing that you rely upon. What I'll ultimately say to you is that, yeah, I give him about a 10% chance to win both games. But if they come out of this next, it's not about the next two. It's about the next four. Because you split that, you come out 2-2, and you keep pace in the division, you're putting yourself in the best possible position to succeed. Unless you just go 4-0 on everybody's heads and surprise everybody. But I think, you know, the percentage chance of that happening, much, much lower. 615-737-1045 is how you get involved. So let's look at the Colts' next four, because that's a curiosity as well. The Colts' next four will feature the Titans on Halloween, but they host the Texans, which is a winnable game for them. They're on the road for Sunday Night Football against the 49ers. Now, what Arizona was able to do to Trey Lance, I thought was pretty telling. He may be able to grow into that role at some point. I don't know how much time Jimmy Garoppolo is expected to miss, but Garoppolo is the better solution at quarterback for the 49ers right now. Without them, you know, there are ways to stop and fluster and confuse a rookie quarterback. And the Colts have a great defense. But Kyle Shanahan is as intimately familiar with DeForest Buckner as anybody, because you'll remember that the Niners traded him to the Colts not that long ago. So they're at the 49ers. They are home in Lucas Oil for the Titans. And then they'll also host the Jets, which it says it's a 7:20 kick on Fox. Oh, that's Thursday night. Colts, Jets, Thursday Night Football. Blech.
Where?
In Indianapolis. That's gross. I'm good on that. But you can beat the Texans. You can beat the Jets. Depending on who's playing quarterback for the 49ers, you can probably at least make it a game. I mean, if you told me that the Colts went 3-1 over their last four, I wouldn't be shocked. And if you told me the Titans went 2-2, I'd tell you that's damn near the best case scenario. But what it means is that the AFC South is still open, because you will then need to have tiebreakers. Now, you could make your life infinitely easier and sweep the Colts on Halloween and have the division done by the time November 1st rolls around, because you'll play them on Halloween, and that will be the last time that... Spooky, that's your analysis. Thank you. Thank you for all your help there. That was really, really productive. Spooky, he says. What does Mike Vrabel have to say about the division and getting a division win over the Jags on Sunday? Because that was the first question I asked him in the post-game press conference. And he's aware of all the problems that this particular team faces right now, even if they're coming off a game where they beat the Jags, a division opponent, by 18 points.
And I think really good is just to be able to, you know, do some things that are really positive to mask some of the stuff that is just going to cause you to lose, which we all know what those are. The poor fundamentals, poor tackling, penalties, you know, protection, you know, issues, not giving Derek enough room in a run game.
you know, just a lot of things. And, you know, that starts with me, and it has also got to be on the players, you know, to go out there and, you know what to do, play fundamentally sound. And but we when we had to have plays, we had them. You know, impressive to be able to go out there and, you know, get a stop. And when we did, impressive to be able to take the football and control it the way we did.
So that's Mike Vrabel speaking with the assembled media after the win over the Jags on Sunday afternoon. So right now, the Titans are the only team in the AFC South with a positive scoring differential. They've scored 132 on the season. They have scored against them 130. So they're about, I mean, they're a pretty average football team at this point at 3-2. The Texans have a divisional win at the very least because they beat the Jags at the start of the season, so that puts them at second place in the South despite their 1-4 record. They, though, are getting outscored 89-141. So they are a very, very bad football team. The Colts, then the Jags at 0-5, 93-152. In fact, the Jags have a better scoring differential than the Texans right now, which is pretty funny. It's a trash division.
Well, you lose 40-0 to someone.
Who lost 40-0?
The Texans.
Who?
The Texans to the Bills?
Oh, that's right.
That was
because that was
last week?
That was after the Bills opened with the loss to the Steelers, right? Was that week 2?
No, I believe that was not this past Sunday, but the one before.
Dear God.
Because that's where Davis Mills had negative pass yardage at halftime.
Yeah, that's probably the defensive stats for the
pretty cranked up.
For the Bills.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Skewed by the fat goose egg that the Texans put up against them.
They got 2 shutouts, right? Didn't they beat the Dolphins 35-0?
That is correct.
Yeah, that'll help.
They're good. I mean, the Dolphins are bad, and the Texans are worse. But the Bills are good on defense.
And offense.
And all of it. All right, next, polls. So we've declared ourselves as a show fans of Casey Musgraves, yes?
Oh, yeah.
Do you see what's happening with the Grammy Awards?
No.
They have ruled her new album, Starcrossed, ineligible in the country music category.
Really?
At the upcoming Grammy Awards.
That's what's going to cross the line as not country?
That's what I'm saying. Like, what are we doing here? Who are these gatekeepers? And why are they stupid? we'll begin our investigative reporting on this slight accused or alleged against Casey Musgraves, because there's so much... This is the worst. This was the worst part of my trip back from Jacksonville yesterday, right? Because it's not the fact that I had to wake up at 1 a.m. Central Time. Goodbye, Schaefer. Schaefer's waving very vigorously at the camera for those watching on Zone TV.
It's the Forrest Gump wave. It's on the boat.
There's a joke to be made there, but I'll hold off. Perhaps we'll hear from Forrest later in the show. The worst part of my trip home from Jacksonville was not waking up at 1 a.m. Central Time to make a flight at 4 a.m. Central Time to get the hell out of Jacksonville without any kind of airport delays, because apparently all of Southwest is under protest, which is, you know, just a stupidity that I do not have time for. But, and it was not having to come directly into work from the airport, because the show is fun and I enjoy doing the show and I'm happy to be back in Nashville. No, the worst part was the ride from the Nashville International Airport to the one over by the Zone Studios because of my Lyft driver.
And oh, no.
He was a very nice man. But his taste in music was trash.
What was it?
It was just terrible. I drink beer. I drive pickup trucks. Country music. Blah 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 blah.
Mm.
But like, you know, with auto-tune, I don't. I'm deeply unfamiliar with like current country music, outside of people that I respect.
So what, they're putting Casey Musgraves in pop, I guess.
I have not yet read the article from Rolling Stones. I've just read the headline, which makes me guilty of everything that I've accused the people, the John Gruden. New York Times article of doing. I am what I hate. But Casey Musgraves, it doesn't say anything about being moved into pop. Her newest record, Starcrossed, won't be in contention for the same honor at this year's ceremonies, according to an email. Oh, emails across the board, not just the New York Times. The Rolling Stone getting in on the email action. President of Universal Music Group Nashville, Cindy Mabe, to the Recording Academy. The Academy has decided the album is not eligible for contention in country. In the country album category, Starcrossed was instead ruled eligible for pop vocal album. So that's where we're drawing the line. That's dumb. polls.
Not now, Jenny. I'm on the radio. Buck Rising gave me a job. Said something about a poll update. Hope that wasn't at that club where you became a folk singer. Anyway, Buck Rising's producer and correspondent has the final poll update. I'm not a smart man, but I know who Lucas Panzeca is.
Thank you, Forrest.
I just always picture Rhett talking into the mic like that, and it just makes me giggle.
Well, yeah, because he does like the turkey neck thing when he does it.
Folk singer.
Which I hope nobody was recording on Zone TV, because what I did was basically sexually suggestive.
Who are the winners of the football weekend? Cody Wallace has Mark Stoops as Death visiting, knocking on the door of the Georgia Bulldogs after already having taken care of LSU and Florida and the rest of the Kentucky schedule.
I mean, Georgia may run over Kentucky because that defense is just, I mean, it's unstoppable. It's inevitable. It's Thanos. But I do think that Kentucky-Georgia's probably, I mean, Tennessee-Ole Miss is going to have greater sex appeal, but Georgia-Kentucky is low-key spicy. Like, I really am excited to see just how far away Kentucky is from a team like Georgia with clearly inferior talent, but with a style of play that drags you down into the muck.
It's just the next step in finding out just how big that gap is between Bama, Georgia, and everybody else.
Folk singer.
Mahogany says, people who hate Alabama are winners of the weekend. Who are the losers of the football weekend? Puka says Penn State. Kenneth says the Colts and the Longhorns. Horse mascots.
The Longhorns. Wait.
Colts? No.
What?
Hang on.
What did you just do?
Just keep going.
No. Let's stay here for a while, shall we? What are horse mascots? The Colts and the what?
Oh,
what
God.
Happened? Say it to me.
No, I don't.
Say
know.
It to anybody. Say it to somebody.
I don't know.
Where's Chris Russo?
Buddy, say it to somebody.
That's my favorite.
PJ says Bill O'Brien.
No. Wait. I'm not done with you
Mahogany
yet.
Mahogany says Urban Meyer.
I'm not done with you yet.
Daniel says the Giants getting blown out and losing pretty much every key player in the process. I'm just going to bulldoze right through that.
All right. Losers are our Texas fans because, I mean, we talked about that a little bit yesterday. That's probably the best Oklahoma-Texas game I've ever seen. But, like, all you have to do if you're Texas is make the tackle and hope they miss the field goal. But no, instead they're just like, yeah, you got it, bud. Straight to the end zone. Unreal.
Mr. Mort said losers of the weekend are all the team that lost. It's so funny.
Ha, ha, ha.
Does Alabama still win the national championship? 51% say no.
Oh, really?
Pretty even.
In favor of Georgia, I wonder?
51-49.
That is curious. I mean, you know, it's like Tom Brady. I don't bet against Tom Brady. I don't bet against Nick Saban. I have every confidence that Alabama will figure it out.
Are the Colts dead yet? 53% say no, over 1,000 votes. Look, the 47% saying yes. Colts have the Texans. I know we already talked about their upcoming stretch, but Colts have Texans. Titans have Bills. If those games go the way people think they will, Titans are one game ahead after week 6. How are we going to say the Colts are dead in the water, one game back of the division?
The one that did make me laugh, though, is somebody just tweeted us a gif of a dead horse being beaten. That one made me laugh. But not for PETA reasons. Don't come after me. But, yeah, the Colts in their next four, hosting Texans at 49ers, hosting Titans, hosting Jets. The Titans next four, hosting Bills, hosting Kansas City on a short week, at Indianapolis, at the Los Angeles Rams. This is the stretch of the season where you find out how actually good or not good your local professional football team is.
What is Lamar Jackson, a quarterback or running back, like the SpongeBob meme? 62% say quarterback, 38% say running back. And then final poll of the day, is the AFC South the new NFC East? 50% say yes, 14% say no, 36% say I just threw up a little bit.
The 38% that voted for Lamar Jackson as a running back, I hate you. Blaine and Mickey next.